Hey, this is Gary Parrish again from CBS Sports. It's now Monday, November 30th, and this is the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. I'm joined, as usual, by my colleagues Matt Norlander and Sam Vecini, and we got a lot to get to today. Fun weekend of college basketball. Wanted to start, though, I think. Sam, are you awake? You were up late last night, I know, at the Wooden Legacy, right?
I was. We had a nice game with Michigan State and Providence, where Michigan State kind of pulled away late.
Ruined the drunk bet. Absolutely ruined it. Like, when you get plus +8 Providence as your drunk bet, and you're up, I think they were up, like, what?
They were up 4 with, like, 6 minutes left or something.
They were up more. They were up. They were ahead with 5:40 left, right? Okay, so that means you basically got you're supposed to cover that. Very disappointed in Providence not being able to cover the drunk bet.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of fell apart a little bit at the end. Michigan State turned up the defense, and then free throws at the end killed you. Ed Cooley fouled pretty heavily at the end, even when the game was out of reach. So that'll always kill a drunk bet. Whenever just coaches decide to foul a little bit more, whenever the game has run its course, I would say. So, yeah, it was a really fun event this year. I think it was actually the strongest event out of all of these early season tournaments. You had, high end teams like Michigan State. You had some, question marks, I guess I would say, in Arizona and Providence. Arizona came in with a number 11 ranking in the country and then ended up losing to Providence on Friday night in a really fun game. Then you had teams like Boise State, Evansville, a lot of those like UC Irvine, like mid-major-ish teams that could make NCAA tournament runs by the time the year ends. So that was a really fun field. It was a really strong field. A lot of good teams, and Michigan State came out on top again. And Michigan State is pretty clearly got the best resume in the country right now. I mean, they've proven the most. They've beaten Kansas, who went down and won Maui. They have beaten now Providence and Boise State, both of whom, in my opinion, will be NCAA tournament teams. I'm very impressed with what I have seen from Michigan State. I'm very impressed with watching them up close for 2 days this weekend. Well, so there's a lot to be excited about.
Well, whether the Wooden Legacy was the best tournament or not, you certainly got the best matchup in terms of a title game, and not just because it was Providence-Michigan State. Like, whatever. Is that even better than Xavier-Dayton? I know the final score was closer. The game was more competitive, but
sure.
On paper, whatever. But, and this is not something we could have predicted even 3 weeks ago, which is what made it great. Mm-hmm. You got a game, but on national television on Sunday night, overshadowed by the NFL and the Patriots Broncos, of course, but for college basketball fans, it was big, between two legitimate national player of the year candidates, if not, at this point, based on what they've done this season, the two leading national player of the year candidates, yeah. Of course, Denzel Valentine at Michigan State and Chris Dunn at Providence. Norlander, were you able to, with the baby and all, watch any of it?
Yeah, I was actually able to watch a lot. We've had a ton happen in college hoops since we last spoke, and there's a ton to get to. I was super psyched for the Valentine Dunn show, but obviously foul trouble prevented that from being all that it could have been. Obviously, it was actually also interesting in that Kobe announced his retirement and Magic Johnson was on hand at that game. Obviously, Magic, the biggest Laker legend ever. And then there for to see Denzel in Michigan State. So it was this weird convergence of basketball news that we saw happen on Sunday. And Kobe's thing actually kind of took over the world. And I also briefly thought, I was like, wow, I don't know how many more. We'll have LeBron. We'll have Kevin Garnett when he retires. But we're not going to have too many guys who didn't go to college, who didn't play college basketball, right, but are these huge college basketball or huge pro basketball icons. But I found that pretty interesting overall. In terms of the big picture from the weekend, I just want to – let me blab for a few minutes here, and then you guys can take it where you want to take it. I just want to hit on a few things. One, Wichita State, we had mentioned briefly on last week's podcast that it wouldn't be good if they went 1-2 for the resume. Well, they go 0-3. They're the first team ever to be ranked in the AP poll and lose 4 games as a ranked team in the month of November. No one's ever done that. Obviously – Fred VanVleet's dealing with, dual injuries with a hamstring and with an ankle. He should be back this week. Anton Grady took a really bizarre and awkward bump collision that he fell to the floor. He didn't necessarily look like he was moving at first, but he was taken away on a stretcher. He has since recovered. He flew home with the team. He should be good. Just a spinal contusion overall, but it was definitely one of those freaky plays, and you worried for the worst for a few there. So Wichita State is just, they're in a hole. They get Utah this week. It's a huge, huge game. And they also get UNLV. Utah might be next week. I don't have their schedule in front of me. But overall, Wichita State going 0-3 in that tournament was a big newsmaker overall. Xavier being really, really good. I mean, GP bumped them up rightfully to number 12 overall. Xavier is 7-0. The only team that can match that in terms of undefeated marks right now are Michigan State and Cincinnati, who is also 7-0. They've been really, really good. As I said last week, this was a big week to just learn a little bit more about a number of teams, and man, oh man, I mean, Xavier looks really good. And the interesting thing about that is last year it was a team that relied on Matt Stainbrook so much, and yet they lose him. And like, we knew Jalen Reynolds was going to be good, but I think he's been even a little bit better than expected. And for that team to be as deep as it's become, I mean, it's not just Reynolds and Blewett. They've got a lot of options overall, and they can score in a lot of different ways. It's really impressive overall. So Xavier was a team that stuck out to me. And then I want to mention that Syracuse, they won the battle for Atlantis after Gonzaga and UConn didn't. They actually ended up playing in the consolation game, and UConn goes 1-2, but they still look really good to me. That's why these tournaments can be so weird, because you'll have teams sometimes will go 1-2, but not necessarily worse for the wear. Meanwhile, Cuse, I would say they're the team I was most wrong about. I mean, I would have considered them beginning the season ultimate bubble team, maybe get to Dayton in or out, but right now, undeniably, they've looked fantastic. Benajay has been solid. Cooney has been better than I even thought he would be, and I know he's really good. But the breakout star, I mean, honestly, who would have expected that Tyler Lydon would be as good as he's been, right? He's been just absolutely tremendous.
The answer is nobody. The answer to that question is nobody.
Nobody, right? And that's what makes the season fun, is because, listen, we can – I know the recruiting dudes know who Tyler Lydon is to a certain extent, but no one expected or knew who this kid was, and he looks like – freaking fantastic. Like, could be their best player by the end of the year over Benajay, in my opinion. So those were a few things that stood out. Also, Cal dropped 2 in a row. Not exactly great for them. You know, they lost to San Diego State. They gave up like a 30-5 run or something like that. And then Richmond just, it was a close, entertaining game, but Richmond carved him up, and Richmond might be a little bit better. So that's kind of my broad takeaway from the weekend. There's still a lot more that happened. I know Sam wants to get to what Izzo did and all that stuff, but super interesting, and definitely, you know, a few teams that have their finger on the panic button to a certain extent, no doubt about it. Indiana as well. I think they've lost again since we recorded. I can't quite remember, but I think they were lost again after we posted the last podcast.
Well, okay, a lot of stuff here.
Jeez, first, yeah, Matt.
Yeah, no,
sorry, just, guys. I wanted to get it all in. I'm sorry.
We you just torpedoed the entire order of the podcast I had set up here. But whatever, it's fine. Here, let's take these things, a couple of them. First, Syracuse, you're exactly right. Probably, from a positive perspective, the biggest surprise in the country. From some, that's a team that I would not have considered. I didn't consider ranking in the preseason. I now have them 13th in the top 25 and one. And listen, I get it. Like, you know, you might go, God, are they really that good? This is sort of the way I take it early in the season. I don't try to, rack my brain and figure, is somebody really good? I'll go, hey, listen, if you've beaten people that I think are really good, then that's fine. That's good enough for me. Maybe subsequently you'll prove that you weren't the 13th best team in the country, but that's the great thing about ranking basketball teams every day. I can change just like literally within 24 hours of you changing. I can change when you change. And, you know, right now they're sitting here 6-0. They've got a win over Connecticut and a win over Texas A&M. Those are two teams that I also have ranked, obviously, below Syracuse now. So 13th in the country and really, really playing well. Xavier, you mentioned they were terrific. They've got 6 double-digit wins out of their 7. A 16-point win at Michigan, which is really impressive. A 29-point win over a previously undefeated Dayton team, which is really impressive. I've got them ranked 12th. So Xavier and Syracuse have gone from unranked in the preseason to 12th and 13th. In the top 25 and one. With Wichita State, I think it's pretty clear now based on the schedule. You mentioned that Utah game. It's actually December 12th. They get UNI twice and those will be, you know, quality games. Seton Hall's on their schedule, and that might actually be a quality game, given that Seton Hall's already owns wins over two SEC schools. Evansville isn't bad. They're 5-1 with a lone loss to Providence. But my guess would be at this point, we're going to enter the Missouri Valley Conference tournament with Wichita needing the automatic bid to get to the NCAA tournament. There's just, you know, the committee can look at and will look at your rosters and the health of that roster, you know, when you played, you know, games. So these games that were played down at Disney World without Fred VanVleet, that'll be considered. But they can't give you quality wins where you don't have them. They can take into account why you lost games you lost, but they can't, you know, they can't create a quality win for you. And if you don't have them, you're not getting an at-large bid. And so it's just crazy to think it's, you know, it's still November, and we basically, you know, barring, you know, them just running the table or something, they're probably going to have to, a team with Ron Baker, Fred VanVleet, and Greg Marshall coaching is probably going to need an auto bid, and we kind of know that in November. I mean, Sam, do you see a way where that's not true? I mean, I recognize there is a way where that's not true, but it seems like the likely scenario is right now they're going to need to go to St. Louis and win games or else.
Yeah, the margin for error is nothing right now. I mean, they have to beat UNLV, Seton Hall, and Utah. They have to probably go 16-2 or 17-1 in the Missouri Valley, in my opinion.
If they win those three games... win those three games and they go 16-2 in the Valley, they will get an at-large bid if they lose, personally.
See,
how many losses are we looking at there? I mean, that's what, a 5-4-6 loss?
That's a 5-loss team, or a 6-loss team, yeah. And I think that might get it done. I think it probably would, to be honest. But you have to remember, this Wichita State team is a team that hasn't necessarily gotten the most respect from the committee over the last 2 years. I mean, they were begrudgingly, in my opinion, named a number one overall seed and put in the toughest region that I think we've ever seen, really, in that Kentucky region whenever they had the great game against the Wildcats. And then last year, they were like the number 10 team in the AP poll going into Selection Sunday, and they ended up with a 7 seed. So I wonder how much respect the committee has for this group. If they do end up losing 6 games this year or something along those lines, I think there will be an argument. But I'm mostly with Gary here. I think that the margin for error is nothing, and the most likely scenario is they're going to have to win the Missouri Valley to get in. As far as some other teams, yeah.
We talked about this last week. Like, the committee, once upon a time, and I know every year is different, blah, 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 but they left a 25-win Steph Curry team out. Because it didn't have quality wins. Like, they won't hesitate to leave Ron Baker and Fred VanVleet out. They left Steph Curry out of the tournament because of a lack of quality wins.
I commend them for. I mean, there's a certain argument to say that's stupid. You should want star power and people. But honestly, I do feel like the committee does its best job, does as good of a job as it possibly can when it comes to let's evaluate and truly getting the best teams in, regardless of who might be on the team or the name attached to the jersey. I generally think that they do a pretty honest job when it comes to
I think they – yeah, but I think the system's flawed. We got into this last year when it as it pertained to Murray State. Like, how do you know Murray State's not one of the best teams in the country? Like, they – based on nothing more than league affiliation and a resistance from Power 5 schools – to allow them to be in some of these like wooden legacy tournaments or Advocare invitationals, like because they took some losses early when they were unhealthy and adjusting to, you know, a new rotation. It was exactly like Wichita State. You know, they by December 1st, it was clear that they weren't going to, it didn't matter what they did going forward, they weren't going to be able to get in. Now, it's not exactly like Wichita State, because Wichita State, I think there is a path for the Shockers, a difficult one, but at least one existed. For Murray State, there wasn't one that existed. There was nothing they could have done post December 1 to get an at large bid to the NCAA tournament. And so I know it's difficult to evaluate teams that play in the so called mid major leagues or even low major leagues. I get it, but I do think it's unfortunate when you just decide that a team couldn't possibly be one of the best teams in the country based off its lack of quality wins without recognizing it's not so much that they don't have quality wins as much as they didn't have opportunities to get quality wins after December 1st. Like, they didn't exist. That's to me a fundamental flaw with the selection process, but there's no easy solution to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. To move on to some of the other 45 subjects that Matt hit in that.
I got plenty more in the holster, but I'm holding back.
I am sure that you do. Xavier, I would say, is probably one of the most impressive teams, maybe the most impressive team that I've seen so far this year, as far as preseason expectations versus what they actually are. That team is terrific. They're deep. They're talented. Edmund Sumner, whoever that guy is, I didn't know anything about him coming into the year. I'll say that. I will fully admit that. Like Tyler Lydon, I had a pretty decent grasp on, like for Syracuse, and Malachi Richardson. Like I thought those guys would be legitimate impact players for Syracuse, but Edmund Sumner is a guy that I had no expectations for whatsoever, and he's been awesome. He's averaging like 11 points a game. He's been great next to Trevon Blewett, who's leading that team in scoring. Jalen Reynolds has been, it's funny that Matt says like he's been a little bit better than he expected. I think that Reynolds is a little bit worse than I expected this year. I kind of thought that he would totally blossom into this absolute monster inside. And it hasn't really happened yet because he's still struggling with foul trouble and with adjusting to the physicality of the game and having to try to avoid those fouls at some point. But this is just an awesome experienced team that I think is going to be there for the long haul. I don't know if they'll be able to challenge Villanova necessarily, but they're the second best team in the Big East to me right now. And that's shaping up to be a stronger league now that we have Xavier that looks really good, Providence that looks better than we expected because of Criston being awesome, obviously, but the guys around him, Rodney Bullock has stepped up in a way that was kind of expected this offseason. But Ben Bentel, their center, has been awesome this year. He is like 6'9" bruiser who can rebound inside, but then also step away and shoot threes. He is their clear second best player, and he's a guy that, I mean, maybe a couple years down the road might even get NBA looks. Like, he's a really, really good player that deserves a lot more credit nationally. As far as Cal, that's a situation that I don't know what's going on there. I mean, Quanzo Martin,
time, Sam, I'm not necessarily fretting over that. They didn't lose to terrible teams. I mean, the runs were bad. I'll let you
give
up
94 points to that Richmond team.
I know, mean, but like, yeah, but scary. Rooney's
Quanzo
like,
Martin's a defensive guy. Like that.
I agree. Richmond, you know, I don't know. It might've been,
That's not a shot at Richmond at all.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely not. Yeah.
Richmond's a solid team that will be like a borderline NCAA tournament, like NIT team, but 94 points on a neutral floor. I mean, you give up 75 to San Diego State. That's almost as bad as giving up 94 to Richmond.
Sure.
Like what's going on there with the defense, I guess, is my question. I'll have to watch them a little bit more, but that scares me a little bit. So we'll see what's going on with Cal going forward. Do we have what other subjects do we have?
Well, I think one out there that's I wrote about it yesterday, Wisconsin, right? They're sitting here now. They've already got 3 losses, and the losses are to Western Illinois, Georgetown, and they got blown out at Oklahoma yesterday. They already have 2 double-digit losses. Just sort of line it up as it relates to last year. They didn't take their 3rd loss, I believe, till February 24th. Now they already have 3. It's November 30th. They already have 2 double-digit losses. They only had 1 double-digit loss all last season. It was a December loss in the ACC Big Ten Challenge to the eventual national champion, Duke Blue Devils, and it was I think it was 80-70. It was a 10-point loss. So they didn't lose a game by more than 10, and they only lost 1 by double digits. They already got 2 this season. I mean, listen, you don't have to be the best college basketball analyst in the world to understand what's happened here. They lost 3 NBA players and 2 senior guards. And when you don't replace them with impactful freshmen or transfers, I guess this is the deal, right? But the only thing that makes it slightly surprising, like it wouldn't be surprising, literally, like basically if it were anybody else, but like you just assume Bo Ryan would figure it out. Like, you know, because he always does. And yet, KenPom now projects them to finish 18-13 overall, 9-9 in the Big Ten. That's actually 7th in the Big Ten, according to those projections. I think most people who listen to college basketball podcasts know, especially this one, as much as we've talked about it over the years, Bo's never finished outside of the top 4 of the Big Ten, and he's never had a 9-loss Big Ten season. And yet, according to the projections, that's where they're headed. Norlander, I'll ask you, do you see any reason to think, other than like they have a borderline Hall of Fame coach, a guy who might be a Hall of Famer someday, And so, like, he'll figure it out. Other than that, the just trust Bo Ryan. Do you see a reason this is gonna be different for them?
I'm only gonna trust Bo Ryan. They're 37th in KenPom right now. I honestly don't know, and I don't know if Ken would know, but when was the last time Wisconsin was that low in his rankings? Mm. They're never this low. They're perennially top 20, even top 10.
Yeah, they're the team that's like top 10 when they shouldn't, you know.
Right, when it doesn't even look like they should be.
Right.
For sure. And now the ACC Big Ten Challenge, which I'm sure we're going to get to, their game is at Syracuse, which Fine. Now looks like a game that's going to be really, really tough for them to win. So you could be looking at a 4-4 Wisconsin team. And with that, the remaining games will be home to Temple for non-con. Home to Temple, home to Milwaukee, home to Marquette, home to Corpus Christi, home to Green Bay. They'd have to run the table there and, in my opinion, finish above 500 in the Big Ten to have a decent chance at a bubble situation, because the Big Ten naturally it'll provide at least 5 at-large teams, I would think, going forward. But even the Big Ten right now is just a little bit shakier than we might have thought overall.
I will say the top of the Big Ten looks strong, though, doesn't it?
Yes, like, but then like
top two, yeah.
I mean, like Maryland, I don't know that Maryland has blown anybody away, right? I mean, they're undefeated, but they've been in some games that probably shouldn't be games if you're ranked second in the country or third in the country, whatever they're ranked. Sure. But Michigan State looks better than any of us thought, and mm-hmm. Purdue is beating the crap out of everybody. Like, I mean, Purdue looks good.
Purdue looks really good.
I think those top three are like strong, and then like if you can get Indiana to figure out something, or
right, but that's the whole
Michigan
point.
To figure out something,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, then you could have a fourth. A
Illinois
fourth
has just been brutal. Ohio State's been really rough. Ooh, Iowa terrible. Has been maybe what you would expect, but overall, I mean, it's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying maybe it's just a smidge below what we expected.
Deep as I expected.
Yeah, I would say, okay, so it's November 30th. I'll say right now, you know, gun to my head, I will say Wisconsin makes the tournament. But that's like a 51-49 kind of decision. It is weird to see this team so out of sorts. It's not really reliable defensively. I mean, I watched some of that Oklahoma game, and I'll be frank with you. I mean, GP called me right near halftime, I guess it was yesterday. I was about done with it. I was like, I can't really watch this. I mean, Oklahoma's fun to watch. I love Buddy, and that's a legitimate team right there. But Wisconsin, they just got to get their ducks in a row here and get things in order. It could be a little rough going forward.
I don't know that they have ducks. Like, that might be the problem. They might not have ducks.
They don't have ducks. Yeah, that's Ethan Happ should be like in 2 years. I think Ethan Happ is going to be a kind of player that really blossoms into something. I just don't expect him to be as good as he needs to be this year. Vito Brown is probably not going to be as good as they need him to be. And Nigel Hayes overall been good, not great. I mean, he can't shoot to the level that they need him to shoot. I think that's one of the biggest problems, is he's not keeping defenses honest in any sort of way, nor should he, to be honest. He's not offensively as polished as Wisconsin needs him to be to help that offense.
We might find out that he was always better suited to be the other guy as opposed to the guy, right?
No, I think that's right. The offense isn't what I'm worried about, though.
Oh, like, no, they're not guarding at all. They're not guarding.
Fine.
Yeah, they're not guarding at all.
The defense right now, if you look at their just raw defensive rating, not the adjusted KenPom number, which still accounts for a little bit for last season. Their raw defensive rating, which is like points per 100 possessions, they're giving up 104.7. That is 201st in the country. That is a number that I think is probably unfathomable to any Bo Ryan coach team. And that's kind of where I think this team has growth. Like, I don't think that number will stick, just knowing what we know about Bo Ryan being able to coach up a defense. Like, everyone thinks of Bo Ryan as this incredible offensive coach, and he is. I mean, that swing offense is remarkable. But, you know, he's really also been an incredible defensive coach for the last, you know, I guess 3 decades, but at least we've seen it for the last decade and a half on the major college basketball circuit. His defenses have never finished outside of the top 55, according to KenPom. And right now, like I said, that number is way too low. And I think that defense is going to rebound a bit, to where I think there's still room for growth here, to where this team that we're seeing right now in November isn't the team that we're going to see in January and February, like, you know, all teams around the country, but particularly with Wisconsin. I think that their marginal room for growth is higher than most other teams, because I just expect them to improve defensively.
Yeah, you know, I still just wonder, like, listen, the defense is a problem. They'll get better, right? You know, Bo Ryan's still the coach, but
right.
Can they get good enough? Like that's what I would be concerned about. Like, can they get good enough? Because I think everybody knows they lost Kaminsky Decker, right? They also lost a third NBA player. Like, I don't know that the actual college basketball fan understands that. And then they lost two senior guards on top of that. Like, you know, Mark Few was fretting all preseason about, God, we lost two senior guards. Well, like, so like when you do, even if you return like great front court players, you lose two senior guards, like that's tough. That's what happened to Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then if you lose pros, that's tough. That's also what happened to Wisconsin. And they didn't, you know, they didn't bring in a Kentucky class or a Duke class. You know, they brought in a typical Wisconsin class, which is typically players that need to be developed. And yeah, I think the only thing, there's two things going for Wisconsin right now. One is Bo's still the coach. Two, I do think that outside of maybe the top three in the Big Ten, who scares you, right?
Yeah,
that might be their, like, if you were in the ACC, North Carolina, Duke, Virginia, Louisville looks good. There's a lot of, like, you know, high quality teams that you might just not be able to get past. But in the Big Ten, outside of maybe just the top three, like, who really scares you? But other than that, like, I think that would be my hashtag quote for the podcast. they might not have ducks.
Like, here's the thing I think I actually told Yahoo's Jeff Eisenberg about this. We were sitting next to each other at Wooden yesterday whenever this whole Wisconsin thing was going down. I think that I actually kind of trust this Wisconsin team a little bit more than I even trust Michigan right now. I know that they're a worse team than Michigan right now, but I haven't seen anything from Michigan this season, and it's basically the same roster as last season, to where I think they're a markedly different team. You know, like, this Wisconsin team at least has, like, the idea of variance going for it, where we don't have enough of a sample size on these kids, and maybe they'll improve throughout the year. Like, Michigan just doesn't look good to me. Like, that seems like more of a fatally flawed roster, and more of a certainly fatally flawed roster than this Wisconsin team is, I guess I would say.
I think there's something to that. But Michigan, I don't know. For the past couple of years, I've never been huge on their personnel, and I've been a little lower on LeVert than most.
Like, I even like Caris LeVert a lot. I just don't know where they're going to get the size inside. I don't know that Derek Walton and Zach Irvin have taken those necessary next leaps. It's just hard for me to see where that team improves inside and like with their actual like known weaknesses.
I think there's something to that. I'll say this, okay, as we kind of wrap up the Big Ten portion here. I like Wisconsin long-term more this season than Michigan by a little bit, but I think both of those teams are the two primary candidates to be perpetually on the bubble as we get, you know, into 2016 and into February and March. I think they'll both be in a situation where, you know, we never feel comfortable putting them at above it, like a 10 seed or whatever, and they could take on bad losses that really put them in some serious issues.
Like, Michigan right now is shooting 45% from three, like, have an insane steal percentage, like, have their numbers on offense look more unsustainable than you would expect, even for John Beilein standards. Like, their shooting just looks a little bit unsustainable to me.
I would think they're going to lose Tuesday at NC State ACC Big Ten Challenge. You know, that's I think that's
tough place to play.
Tough place to play. I actually think NC State will get better as the year goes along. They haven't wowed, but I would think they'll lose. Overall, that challenge, by the way, I mean, the big one was supposed to be Indiana at Duke, but now it's weird, right, GP? Because there is, like, normally, all right, so you got Maryland UNC, which is the huge one, right? That's awesome. Marcus Page is supposed to play for it, and we can get to that. But normally this usually gives us, like, two really good ones, if not three really good ones. But overall, like, Virginia and Ohio State, not that intriguing overall. Like, maybe Ohio State can pull out a win at home there. They definitely need it. Nebraska hosts Miami. That's kind of blah. Purdue at Pitt, we'll see. But I actually like Purdue to get that one on the road. Louisville at Michigan State, I'm still –
that's probably the second best game right now.
I guess, but I tell you, I'm still down on Louisville overall. I know you put him 25th GP. I think Michigan State's going to win that game by 15 points. Personally.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's transition here into Louisville because they are 5-0. You know, I believe it's five double digit wins. They're guarding at a high level. I think they're top 10 defensive efficiency. They're unranked in the AP poll as of like we're speaking. That's going to be updated later today. I have them in the top 25 and one and have had them there for a few days. Rick Pitino, interesting, said that he believes that Louisville is unranked because people are upset about the stripper scandal or something like that. He basically tied the lack of a national ranking for his Louisville Cardinals to the off-the-court issues that plagued that program in the preseason, which, listen, I love Rick Pitino. I think he's terrific for college basketball. Like, he's a Hall of Fame coach. But that's silly, right? I mean, you want to know why Louisville's not – as somebody who ranks teams every day, let me tell you why Louisville is unranked in the AP poll. Because when you start the season unranked, which they did everywhere, they were unranked everywhere in the preseason – it's very hard to become ranked without beating somebody who is ranked. People don't typically just elevate unranked teams into the rankings unless they beat somebody who was ranked at the time because, first off, a lot of spots don't open up because people don't play tough schedules early. And secondly, when those teams that are ranked lose, they typically, that's a quality win for somebody who was unranked, and so you elevate them instead. Louisville's 5-0, but has no wins over good teams. That's why Louisville's unranked. Like, this isn't, like, it's not a conspiracy. It's not even hard to figure out. Like, the reason they're unranked, they haven't been ranked this season in the AP and coaches poll is because they haven't played anybody. They played well, but they played well against nobody. And that's not typically the way you end up in the national rankings.
Yeah, no, I mean, their best win right now is over North Florida.
Right.
North Florida might make the NCAA tournament. Like, that's a pretty decent team in the Atlantic Sun. And that's the key there. Their next best win is over St. Louis, who is going to be in the double digits in the Atlantic 10 this year. And they haven't beaten anybody. I know they've beaten everybody by like 20 points. But yeah, I mean, and I'm even someone who is a lot more sold on this Louisville team than I was coming into the year. Damian Lee and Quentin Snyder and that entire group, like the freshmen that they have right now, Spalding and Mitchell, those guys all look really good to me. Like, this looks like a very talented team, and I think they are going to give Michigan State a little bit more of a test, if only because once Michigan State plays that game against Louisville, they will have played 7 games in 15 days traveling like all across the country. Like, they went to Wooden in California, they had to go to the Champions Classic, they had to go to a couple other places to play in between. So
already by double digits.
You think Spartan? Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that there's a bit of a letdown potential there for Michigan State, but I still think they win. I just think it's going to be a little bit closer. Louisville, to me, though, looks pretty decent, but you have to beat somebody to get in. Like,
right. That's when I read those comments from Rick, I was like, what? Like, you don't really believe that, do you? Trust me, if they win at Michigan State, they'll be ranked everywhere. I already have them ranked, but the reason they're not ranked is very simple. Unranked in the preseason, no quality wins today. That's not usually how people get in.
Listen, this is what this, Patino's got to get used to this because this is going to happen for a while here because their only two tough non-conference games come on the road. They're at Michigan State and they're at Kentucky. They're going to lose both those games. Their other games are all at home, all to bad teams. I mean, they get Grand Canyon, Eastern Michigan, Kennesaw State, currently 338 in KenPom, Western Kentucky, UMKC, and Utah Valley. Let's just say Louisville's going to win all those because why wouldn't they? Honestly, they should. At that point, they'll be looking at 11-2, and the only two legitimate teams, I'll say North Florida's a legitimate team, so we'll say they'll have gone 1-2 against legitimate teams, but 0-2 against big-time opponents that matter, and then they'll enter into the ACC, and that's obviously going to be a slog. So I think you're going to see throughout the season – I'll be right there with, and I've enjoyed Louisville and Pitino's teams over the years in many ways, but I didn't love what they were about last year, even though they clearly accomplished plenty. And my gosh, they made the Elite Eight with that roster and that style. But I just am not sold on this team's personnel this year in terms of being a top 20 team. Call me a hater, whatever.
I am going to call you a hater.
Call me. I'm fine with that. That's fine. But I will say they have not been unranked. Because there is some inherent bias.
No, that's silly. That's just silly talk.
That's stupid.
No, and I even like it. I was going to say it's frustrating. It's not really frustrating. Whatever. I don't care. But like when a coach says something like that, like the fans, like fans are always looking for something to latch onto. Like fans think everybody is against their team. Like everybody, like you don't respect their team enough, or you don't respect their program enough, or you don't watch them enough. And so like when a coach says that, then like fans really latch onto it. So like I've had Louisville fans this morning. Oh, you only have Louisville 25th? Why? Is it you focus too much on the scandal? I'm like, what are you even talking about? Like, if you think that I have Syracuse 13th, you know, like I clearly don't care about their scandal either. I have SMU 19th. Don't care about their, if you're going to be somebody who gets caught up in college basketball scandals when it comes to rankings, like who are you going to rank? You know?
So
like,
yeah, seriously.
Yeah. So like, what are you talking about?
I'll say this. I'll say this with Louisville. The team they remind me of last year is Ohio State's team last year. I mean, just with the way the schedule's shaping up and everything, you have the star freshmen with some older guys intermixed. You know, Ohio State lost both of their games to Louisville and North Carolina in the non-conference, ended up 11-2 in the non-conference, and then went into the Big Ten and, you know, struggled through it. And like Matt said, it was a slog. I think that you're looking at a similar situation with Louisville this year. I think that they're a solid NCAA tournament team, talent-wise. Like I said, like I'm a little bit more sold than Matt is right now on them, it seems like. And they might even, just like Ohio State did, go to the round of 32. And I think that would be honestly a win for them this year, given what's on the roster and how much turnover they would have. But yeah, like I said, like I think that those two teams are pretty comparable. I don't know that the ceiling is super high for this Louisville team necessarily, but I think it's also going to be a fun team to watch throughout the year because they're really athletic. They can shoot the ball a little bit. And, you know, Rick Pitino is always going to play an attractive brand of defensive basketball, at least. I mean, he's always going to get up and down the floor and press a little bit.
I will say this. I do believe they are one of the top 25 teams in the country. I have them ranked in the top 25. And so, you know, we're speaking, it's a little afternoon Eastern right now on Monday. So the AP and coaches polls haven't come out. If I don't know if they'll be ranked, but I do think they should be ranked probably. All right. Unless Norlander wants to run through.
No, we can wrap it up because
about eight random topics all inside of 2 minutes.
Hey, listen, I sat around, okay, taking care of a child.
Oh, Norlander has to take it. Guess what? That's what fathers do, Norlander.
He's going to pull the child card.
I'm loving it. No,
this dude is already gone. You ready for this? He is already gone from sitting in our meetings in the off season saying, the child's not going to affect anything. And talking on the podcast about saying, I've been taking care of a child.
My point is I've been taking care of a child and watching hoops constantly, okay? And so that's why I just had so much on the brain here that I wanted to get to. That's the whole point.
Hey, you got
Nothing's changed, GP. Hey. I'm still here. I'm still rocking it. I'm still grinding it out, okay? Rising and grinding.
I've noticed the music podcast has slipped a little bit.
No, it's just we're going in seasons, man. Season 2 is soon underway. Records and Riffs. Give it a search on iTunes. Rate and review. That's my music.
I listened to a few of them. I really liked the Nirvana one.
Yeah.
I listened to the Taylor Swift one because I'm just sort of fascinated by the Taylor Swift phenomenon. Not fascinated. That might be an overstatement, but I'm interested in the Taylor Swift phenomenon, and so I enjoyed that one. It is good. Like smart people talking about music intelligently. Like I enjoy. Anytime you start something outside of your designated. Expertise.
Yeah.
People are like sort of roll their eyes at you, right? But it's like, good. Seriously, if you're into music, you should listen to them. That would be my recommendation.
I'll give a quick bump.
#, they might not have ducks.
Yeah. And Sam Pacini also has his own independent music or sports podcast.
Certainly not a music podcast.
Not a music podcast. But you can give that a look as well. But yeah, no, let's just hit on UNC Maryland after they play later this week, because that'll obviously be the big one. And now UNC, as we've been recording this podcast, has officially announced that, you know, barring any bizarre last-minute setback, Paige is going to play in that game, which is awesome because we get both teams practically at full strength. Obviously, Maryland doesn't have Deion Wiley for the year.
No, that should be good. All right, so let's get out of here so Norlander can go take care of a baby.
That's right, baby. My beautiful wife has been so patient and kind. As I record this podcast, I'll try and get him next to me for later in the week, and maybe he'll make another brief appearance.
Fingers crossed. Remember, you can subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the quickest way to get the latest episodes. So make sure you do that. Make sure you never miss anything. And either way, what we're going to do is talk to you again later on this week, probably after the ACC Big Ten Challenge is completed. Till then, take care. Bye-bye.